Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
In this episode of Modern Enterprise Podcast, I am talking to Neeraj, who is the CEO of Casten. Neeraj, can you introduce yourself and tell us what Casten is doing?
Thank you. So thank you, Krish, for having me here. I am really looking forward to this conversation today. For people who are listening to this who might not be aware of who I am, I'm Neeraj Tolia, CEO and co-founder of Casten. I've been working on storage systems and distributed systems for a long time, all the way starting from my PhD at Carnegie Mellon, working at companies like HP, Dell EMC, and some of the data protection stuff, et cetera. Right, I'm technically a doctor from Carnegie Mellon, but people only use it to make fun of me, so I always prefer just being called Neeraj. And as I mentioned, I'm co-founder at Casten. We are a startup based here in the Bay Area and in Salt Lake City. We tackle data management challenges for enterprises trying to run stateful applications on Kubernetes. We think of things like backup and recovery, disaster recovery, cross-cluster, cross-cloud, application mobility. And our focus is on how to do it in a very easy-to-use, scalable, and secure manner for all the enterprises out there.
Let us set some context before we jump into our discussion on day-to operations. Let us talk about the state of Kubernetes. Where is Kubernetes in terms of enterprise maturity? And can you explain why enterprises are flocking to Kubernetes like what we are seeing in the market? We haven't seen such traction for other open source projects like OpenStack or Cloud Foundry. Every enterprise customer I talk to are saying that they are either using Kubernetes in production or planning to use it in production. Can you talk a little bit about it?
It's a great question. So again, in terms of context, I've actually been working with Kubernetes since its very early days. My first customer-facing app went live on Kubernetes in 2014 in the pre-1.0 days. So I've seen the ecosystem grow. And having also been a part of the OpenStack ecosystem somewhat back in the day, it's very easy to see why Kubernetes is succeeding today. But to step back a second, right, when we look at your original question was about what is the maturity of the ecosystem today? So I would answer the question in two different ways. First of all, Kubernetes is definitely ready for your production deployments. A lot of folks, as you mentioned, are using it out there in production at scale. People are running thousands of nodes in terms of their size of the Kubernetes clusters. That's it. Still very early days. A lot that the ecosystem has to do to grow up and mature. And I'm guessing we'll talk a little bit about that later. But overall, Kubernetes is quite ready for you for production. And there's a lot of support out there if you're new to Kubernetes. It's also interesting to see, Krish, as you talked about, why has it suddenly taken off? It's taken off very quickly, taken off where previous projects, when you think of OpenStack or other VM orchestrators in the open source space, did not take off. And I think it's because the community did things right. They did not focus on vendors. They did not focus on infrastructure. They focused on developers. They focused on how do people move quickly? How do you deliver business value to the enterprise, right? Which is what they care about. It's not about exciting new infrastructure technologies. That's fun for us engineers sometimes. But at the end of the day, it is about how can I compete better in the market? How can I deliver better things for my customers, better experiences? And Kubernetes allows you to do that in a scalable and rapid manner. And I think that's really what's contributed. The developer and community-first approach of the community has contributed to the success compared to other things that came before it.
There is some confusion about the kind of apps Kubernetes can support. There is a widespread belief that Kubernetes is only useful for stateless applications. But Kubernetes community is working on stateful sets to support stateful applications on Kubernetes. Clearly, enterprises need support for stateful applications so that they can bring in some of their legacy workloads into the Kubernetes stack. What is your take on the maturity of Kubernetes as far as stateful applications is concerned?
That's a great question. So I think there's this misconception or that Kubernetes today is not ready for stateful application. Obviously, I am somewhat biased because I live and breathe in the stateful application ecosystem. But I look at it, and when I try to step back, distance myself from my point of view, I look at what customers are doing. And we have customers that have been in production with stateful applications, with scalable applications, which have lots of users out there for years at this point in time. So, right, we'll talk a little bit about gaps, but today, I think, you know, because of comments people in the community made a couple of years ago, there's a half-life of perception that Kubernetes is not ready for stateful applications. And I believe that is not correct. Today, there's definitely some learning curve, but when I go look at it across the vendor ecosystem in this case, we see pretty much every storage vendor out there, whether it be big or small, support Kubernetes today. Why? Because there's an increasing ask, increasing need, and they fail to stay competitive because people are deploying Kubernetes applications out there. You see the same thing getting mirrored out amongst the database vendors or the NoSQL vendors, where they all have packaging, first-class packaging for Kubernetes today, because that is where people want to run things. They don't want two different control planes. They don't want some things running in VMs and some things running in Kubernetes as far as possible. So we're seeing all of this. There's also stateful sets of actually that you brought up have been mature and stable for a while. But over the last two or three quarters, what has been very interesting to me has been the growth of the container storage interface, which makes storage pluggable, which makes applications portable. And there's a lot that it provides out there from that abstracts away infrastructure for the end users of folks. Yeah. So overall, I think there is definitely a lot that has made it easy to build and deploy these stateful applications. But I will agree with you that it's in some areas, it is still the early days. There are still some gaps that people need to be aware of so they don't trip over themselves. When you go look at it from the point of view of day two challenges, I think a lot of day one has been figured out. Right? How do I get storage up and running? How do I provision storage dynamically? Give self-service provisioning to developers. But some of the day two challenges were is, how do I ensure that my application is going to be up and running for years, not days, not weeks? It'll have upgrades every day, every hour, every week. But overall, my data, how do I ensure it's safe, it's secure? I can use it for test dev. So some of the day two challenges are still open. And sometimes that's where the community has focused traditionally a lot more on day one kind of stuff. But when you go look at the day two stuff, that needs to get figured out. But a lot of folks are working on it. So that's also equally exciting to me.
Yes, I totally agree with you that there are day two challenges and community is focused only on day one. Before we discuss the day two challenges, let us first dig into day one for supporting stateful applications on Kubernetes. Based on what I see with various vendors, there is clearly a high operational overhead involved in setting up Kubernetes for running stateful applications. Getting storage to work with Kubernetes and meet the needs of legacy and data-intensive applications is not easy. Do you think Kubernetes is mature enough to support stateful application without this additional operational overhead?
We are mostly there. We are not completely there yet. So I think storage provisioning has become much simpler. We've seen customers do this, especially in public cloud environments. It's actually relatively very easy. on-prem, which is very important for the enterprise, can sometimes still be a pain point. But at this point in time, it has moved away from being rocket science to implementation processes that people need to follow. But there is still some gap there. And when you talk about operational burden, that is something at Casting we care a lot about. And, you know, leave aside even what we do for a second. There have been this initial adoption of Kubernetes. There's been the adoption of people rapidly picking it up and moving forward. And a lot of that success came from the early adopters that were technically very sophisticated. They were closer to developers in certain scenarios. They were able to get down in the weeds. But when we look at how the ecosystem needs to expand over the next couple of years, how do we get that 5x, 10x, 20x growth? How do we bring other people into the fold that have been used to managing vSphere as an example? And there is operational burden there from the complexity point of view, from the learning point of view. You know, it's something I talk about with other people, how something's greatest strength can be, it's also greatest weakness. Kubernetes, the strength has been compared to other platforms that came before, think even Cloud Foundry, is that it's very flexible. It gives you a lot of power. Same thing applies to stateful applications. But at the end of the day, when you're looking at people that did not grow up in the cloud native world, when they're coming at it from Linux system administration as an example, how do we reduce their operational burden is today not a solved problem. And so we definitely need to focus on that as a community. It's not a shiny, exciting new project. It's not a new toy, but it is something that is going to be critical as we get to the next stage of evolution of Kubernetes today.
I agree. You did talk about some of the challenges with day one, but day two is more critical for enterprises. They need to ensure that the data is available for the applications all the time and it is backed up properly, etc. This is critical not only from the application availability point of view, but also from the governance point of view. Can you talk about some of the challenges a Kubernetes user on day two faces and how the user can mitigate them and ensure that the data stored in Kubernetes environment is compliant with the organization's policies and other regulatory requirements?
It's an amazing question, right? And I'm going to put it into in the words of the customers we talk to, work with, that have us running, etc. When we go look at challenges of day two, some of it happens, actually a lot of it happens, because traditional tools that were built for IT do not work in this environment. When we go look at traditional backup and recovery, disaster recovery products, a lot of them have been very infrastructure focused, not application focused, not developer focused. And therefore, they just don't have the understanding of Kubernetes or even what an application is to be effective. So they simply don't work in this environment. And so that is one side of things. And the other part is that roles and responsibilities have shifted. I leave aside even self-service for a second, but what used to be the operator's point of view, how I provision storage for an app, et cetera, has become self-service. It's become developer-oriented. So developers also sometimes don't have the tools or the skills or interest to be able to focus on these day-to-day challenges. They care about shipping their features to the customers. And day-to-day challenges are somewhat boring to them. So how do you support the operator while still never slowing down the developer is a challenge in environments like this at the top level. Balancing those dev and ops needs is something that's going to be very critical. For all the reasons you talked about, availability, resiliency, prevention of or fast recovery from ransomware, disaster recovery in case my entire region goes down. So those all these day two challenges that can be grueling to get right yourself if you want to hand script something or build something custom. And really what we recommend to folks is, how do you build self-service infrastructure for folks? So you cater to the needs of developers, building complex, eventually consistent applications, or sometimes even boring monoliths within Kubernetes, and give them either the control when they want to, or the ability for them to say, just go protect me according to an operator-defined policy. While the operators care about global compliance, visibility, monitoring, logging, orchestration, right? Backup targets, DR, things of that sort. So that's the split we recommend to people as to how responsibilities should be in this environment. And something sometimes that we've seen is operators have initially gotten left behind in this cloud native journey, but we're seeing them coming back strong as production Kubernetes deployments have grown. We're seeing them become more responsible for the health, the care, the feeding of the platform, not the application, but the platform. And so for scenarios like that, what we say is, right, we obviously provide solutions there in the space to say, you know, within 5 minutes, zero touch, how can you get backup and recovery and disaster recovery up and running in your environment? But it is, some of this is also about culture. Some of this is about technology. Some of it is about process. And getting it right before you go into production is what we recommend, so you know who's responsible for what. Did that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely makes sense for me. Let us now shift gears and talk about some of the use cases you're seeing when you go and talk to your customers, especially stateful applications on Kubernetes.
It's a good question. So we see a lot of use cases for stateful applications for services that ultimately have the end users. That tends to be the majority, you know, I would say 65-70% of the workloads that we see running out there that are stateful. They have their own customers, could be internal to the enterprise, could be end consumers, but these are the applications that are moving quickly in this environment. And the reason why they're putting stateful applications within Kubernetes is they want a single control plane. They don't want two control planes. The developers are controlling the stateful stacks too now. They pick the version of Mongo they want to run or the version of MySQL or Postgres. And so how do you combine all of that in a manner that is also portable? We actually see a lot of multi-cloud use, right? And people define multi-cloud differently. There's a lot of debate there, but people are deploying the same app stack across different environments for different reasons. So I mean, in those environments, how do you make your application portable? Kubernetes is a great way to do some of that. And those are some of the categories of applications we see. But as soon as that happens, when you're running in a multi-cluster, multi-region, multi-cloud, hybrid cloud world, you have these issues of how do you have coherent policies that work across all these environments? How do you set up backup and recovery? How do you set up disaster recovery? So we have customers that, for example, run in Google, backup their data there, and then they are constantly pushing data out into an on-prem environment, which is where they do their disaster recovery testing, as an example. Or folks that run down in very locked down environments, think financial services in AWS, but it really looks like an on-prem data structure. But these are, again, applications that move very quickly, right? And hopefully that gives you a little bit of color about the kind of apps. But in particular, we see some data services show up over and over again. And so we see a lot of MySQL, Postgres, Cassandra, Elastic, Redis, and Mongo out there over and over again in our customers, right, across continents, across use cases, across verticals. And then there's a long tail. We'll see Couchbase, FoundationDB, and a few other things there. But there's this critical mass around these five or six data services that is actually very encouraging to see out there.
Let us now talk about the cloud native landscape. Especially, I want to talk about the debate that is going on in the community about containers and serverless. There seems to be an artificial demarcation, and the community seems to be debating between containers versus serverless. But I don't agree with this kind of demarcation, and I feel that the customer needs will demand a continuum of services from virtual machine on one end to containers and serverless. So I see something like virtual machine offered by cloud providers on one side of the spectrum, and then you see Kubernetes-based container offerings somewhere in the middle. Then you have AWS Fargate, Google Cloud Run kind of services, and then you have functions as a service like AWS Lambda, Google Cloud Functions, Azure Functions, etc. on the other extreme of the spectrum. That's the kind of spectrum I expect to emerge in the market. What is your position on the debate, and how do you see these technologies fitting into the needs of the enterprise?
Of course. So, a couple of different things. And as with always in the case of systems, the answer is always it depends. And it's a more nuanced answer. I agree with you. The same way mainframes haven't gone away today, VMs aren't going away. We're always going to see a spectrum. The different parts of compute infrastructure optimized for different jobs. And it doesn't always make sense to replatform when there's no value to be had in doing that. So overall, from my point of view, I think a lot of these technologies will continue to coexist out there, and we are not going to see any of them go away. That said, I do see for net new applications and new categories of applications, things like containers and Kubernetes winning. When you go look at the deep learning ecosystem as an example, the large majority of projects and products in there seem to be Kubernetes based because it's the best base to start off with. We're seeing something potentially similar that might show up in the edge IoT space just because of, again, the portability that Kubernetes can derive or can help support applications there. So I think for some of these net new categories, we might see a lot more containerization than we'd have seen if it was a natural evolution. That said, I would agree with coexistence. I also, I think there is this misconception out there that, look, it is serverless versus containers or serverless versus Kubernetes. Especially maybe 12, 18 months ago, there was like, Kubernetes will die. There's going to be serverless and everyone's going to be moving to that. Kumbaya. But really, that's not going to happen. Right. From my point of view, I see what you yourself said, that serverless is a point on the spectrum or a tool in the developer's toolbox to use for very specific things that come up. Not the best fit for everything. The other thing, there's a lot of buzz and a lot of money chasing the serverless ecosystem right now. From the enterprise point of view, my guidance and recommendation to people is I still think serverless is a few years too early. It's not there. We're hearing of a few not so pleasant experiences of people that have gone down the route in a big way. And so you need to figure out, is your workload a good fit for it from the developer, from the cost, from the benefit perspective? And is the ecosystem mature enough, not just core platform, but the entire ecosystem surrounding serverless platforms? So I think we're going to see less serverless in the next year to 18 months than some people are predicting. But over time, as that ecosystem matures, I do see it becoming more relevant. But I see it becoming more relevant on a common platform such as Kubernetes. You look at projects such as Knative. You look at projects in that space, all replatforming onto Kubernetes, because that's going to be the common platform to run some of these higher level services on top of.
Yes, Kubernetes can definitely play a role in enabling serverless technologies on top of Kubernetes. Now let's talk about something totally different. This is a question I didn't tell you in advance, but I thought I will ask you this question. What are your thoughts on the debates around open source, especially due to market pressure from large cloud providers like AWS? We have seen many open source startups move to a more restrictive license in 2019, and the debate still rages on social media about how large cloud providers are pushing startups into more restrictive licenses. I would like to pick your brain on Kasten's position in this licensing debate, and also I would like to understand from you on Kasten's contribution to the larger Kubernetes community.
Yes, it's a couple of great questions in there. So let's talk about open source in the context of enterprise, and then we'll talk about what Kasten is doing from that perspective and the broader Kubernetes ecosystem. Open source is going to be a big part of the enterprise ecosystem moving forward. There is no doubt about that. We see that in many different ways. There are always some risks around security. There are some risks around governance, licensing, etc. But it's going to have a big role to play out there. And there are other companies, vendors that will help address some of those to take open source components in, whether it be platforms, whether it be libraries, whether it be tools, and use them in your environment. Some of these tools can be rough. Some of these tools can be opinionated, might not play well with each other. So I think we'll see emergence of a category of companies that provide opinionated or potentially selected solutions and combine those together for a better customer experience, because they are, again, in the business of building applications, not figuring out what technology and how they fit together. So there is that. There has been, as you said, a very interesting shift recently of people moving to less permissive licenses, some of it coming in as a competition from the public cloud, where people are saying, yeah, I have cloud provider X, they're not giving too much back to the ecosystem, but they're using it, providing managed services, extracting value. And I think one needs to step back a second and say, look, there's a difference between a project and a product or a company. Commercializing an open source product is a very different thing than helping an open source community, open source project succeed. Commercialization can come in many different ways, whether you look at SaaS as an example, whether you go look at how people either do open core. So there are different models in that space. But right, on one hand, coming at it from the open source hat point, you know, putting that on, I see why we should not be moving away from permissive licenses, whether they be Apache, BSD, et cetera, because that's how communities grow. That's how some of these things take off. And you don't want to yank the rug out from underneath customers and supporters that have supported open source only to see it not really be open source anymore. And on the flip side, I can see the vendor's point of view. That is, how does the community play together, right? Who is supporting building out these open source tools, technologies, platforms, products, or other projects? And I think there needs to be a happy meeting ground in the middle while still retaining the benefits of the licenses for the broader community, while making sure that the development of these things can be supported in a sustainable manner. So I think we're going to see some more of that. And this is some of the things that we are doing at Casten. We engage with the broader community in a number of different ways. We obviously have a closed offering, which is a commercial offering. A lot of the technology underneath the hood shows up as a part of the Canister project that we have. And right, if you go look at Canister with the K.io, you'll see a lot out there. And that's something we actively maintain, develop in the open. But it's not just that. We try to figure out how do we help with fund other things in the ecosystem, whether it be helping influence how the container storage interface develops, talking about data protection within the Kubernetes community, raising its visibility, setting up working groups, which is what we're doing along with other vendors in a joint collaborative manner so that the entire ecosystem moves ahead so that everyone wins. And then helping support create other projects out there that we depend on in many different ways, whether it be us contributing to them, whether it be helping support maintainers, we do all of those things to be better community citizens. So it's our projects, other people's projects, broader community involvement. We care about those. And even though one would argue that, oh, it takes away from a commercial mission, I think that is the wrong view to take on it. I think this ecosystem, the cloud native ecosystem, is a rising tide. It's going to lift all boats. And it's too early to figure out that, oh, I need to win against this vendor. It's not a zero-sum game, it's an expanding pie. And we are very happy with where we sit in the context of that ecosystem today.
I agree. It is not a zero-sum game. And that is where some of the vendors who have moved to a more restrictive license have miscalculated, in my opinion. Okay, we are now closer to the end of the podcast, and I usually ask my guests to make some predictions. I know predictions are hard, but I still want you to try. I want to know, where do you see Kubernetes going in the next 5 years? And where do you see the larger enterprise software market going in the next 5 years?
Okay. Two very interesting questions. So let's pick up Kubernetes. That's near and dear to my heart. But I like seeing it what it is. I think we are, we all make fun of the Gartner hype cycle, but there's something to be said about that. And I think Kubernetes is close, in my mind, to the top of that hype cycle. We had 12,000 people at KubeCon this year. There were a lot of new people, a lot of people that had already been there, but large net new audience there. And there's a lot of interest in it. There's a lot of hype around it. And as people get more experience with it, we're going to see two things happen. people figure out Kubernetes is not a silver bullet. It's not the best thing for all workloads out there. It's great for net new. It's great for certain kinds of workloads. Maybe not the best for everything. And that's okay. And people will figure that one out. And we'll actually see more mainstream, broader usage once that happens. So that's one thing. There will be, I think, over the course of this year, more failure stories we'll see with Kubernetes, production failures, et cetera. And again, I actually think that's very healthy for the ecosystem. That's going to be a good thing because it'll help people learn, it'll help people share, and help the dev iteration cycle, you know, move much faster for the benefit of the community. So we'll go through, you know, the stroke disillusionment for a little bit, and then we'll see another pickup. But I do see Kubernetes as having a lot of staying power. Unlike, for example, you brought up OpenStack earlier. 5 years from now, you're going to see a lot of Kubernetes. It's going to be one of the more dominant platforms out there. And this one was actually an easy one to predict because the writing's on the wall. We saw the writing on the wall a few years ago, but when you go look at the broader community, everyone believes so. And they are putting their weight behind also making sure that happens. So that's one thing. The enterprise software technology stack, I think, is a more interesting idea. I mean, we are seeing a big change there. And one of the things that I see is not just technology, but also culture. Today, you, me, we live and breathe what's happening in the ecosystem. We live and breathe everything that's new. But sometimes there are more basic things that are changing how the enterprise infrastructure behaves. And sometimes it's simple things like CI and CD, where people aren't used to that process and they are bringing that in along with Kubernetes. It's leading to an org shift. It's leading to a culture shift. And sometimes some of these more basic things will take a few years still to roll out. But as soon as we see, you know, large uptick in these newer platforms, when we see large uptick in newer processes, CI/CD being process-driven, being more agile, releasing more frequently, it will change how people build applications, deliver applications. It will change the pace of innovation, right? When the CIO talks about digital transformation, this is what it's mapping to at the infrastructure layer, in the dev platform layer. And that is very exciting to me. So increased value for end customers, increased consumerification of enterprise products, increased pace of evolution. I think those are the things we'll see from the output. From the input, we'll see a lot more open source. We'll see a lot more containers. In 5 years, we'll definitely see some serverless. Forget about what my somewhat hesitancy earlier on in the conversation. So we'll see all of that happening. Enterprise stacks are going to stay complex. You're going to see a little bit of everything, right? VMs, mainframes, Kubernetes, containers, serverless. You'll see that spectrum there, but it'll become more usable. It'll become easier to adopt as people move past some of the growing pains, as we simplify the operational burden, as we take care of these day-to-day management challenges we've been speaking about.
I am glad you brought up the topic of failures with Kubernetes. I think this is one place where Kubernetes community is shining compared to other open source communities in the past. For example, Cloud Foundry community was more focused on the marketing than giving the real pulse of their platform to their users. And I'm sure this contributed to their demise in front of Kubernetes. But Kubernetes community is doing it differently and helping users see both the success stories as well as failures they had when trying to deploy Kubernetes. And I think this is critical in making users be more realistic about the platform. And I'm really liking this approach of Kubernetes community over the past OSS Foundation approaches we have seen. With that, we have come to the end of this podcast. And Neeraj, it was a great conversation I had with you today. I would love to bring you back into one of the future episodes and discuss more about these topics. Thank you very much for taking your time and joining my listeners at the Modern Enterprise Podcast. I'm glad we had this conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate talking to you, being able to talk to your broader audience out there. If people have any other follow-up questions, you know, find me on Twitter at Neeraj Tolia. Send me an email. Would love to engage. But thank you so much for having me. Really liked the conversation today.